Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Good evening. Welcome to our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I am your host, Doris Hansen, and it's my privilege to be the host of the program tonight and to present you with information about polygamy and what the Bible has to say and what others have to say about it. I was born and raised in the Kingston Polygamy Group, and it's a local group here in Salt Lake, and I experienced a great lack of godly love in the home that I was raised in. And we call the show Polygamy, What Love Is This? Because we want our viewers to know that God has offered to bring us into a love covenant relationship with Himself, and our only obligation to come under this covenant with Him is to say I do to Him rather than I do to polygamy. We are broadcasting live from Salt Lake City, Utah, and this is a telephone call-in program. And you might want to grab your pencil and your paper or pen or whatever and have it handy, because we're going to give you a lot of references tonight that you might want to refer back to. So you might want to start with our phone number. It's 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. We would love to hear from you tonight, your opinions and comments about our show. Or if you'd prefer to email your comments to us, you can send them to tv@aboutpolygamy.com. And I would also like to remind you that our show is rebroadcast on Sunday afternoons in the Boise-Nampa area from 4 to 5 p.m. on KCLP Channel 18. So if you have friends or relatives who live up in that area, you might think that they would watch the show. You might tell them about it. And also, of course, our previous shows can all be watched on our website on streaming video. And the website is whatloveisthis.tv. And from there, you can link on to a lot of information that's on the website or different pages, the answers to our top questions, and the link to our Life After Polygamy support group, which is going to meet next Monday evening, by the way, 6:30 p.m. You might want to, if you're interested in coming, you might want to give us a call or email us, and we'll give you the details. If your life's been touched by polygamy in any way or affected by polygamy, you're certainly welcome to come. And we've had some very good discussion times. And to find out more about us or about our culture or about polygamy or what the Bible has to say about polygamy, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org. And there's a lot of information there, links to other websites as well. And if you're in a polygamy group and you'd like to know more about what we do and why we do it, or if you have questions or comments or just need help, you'll find some information on that website that you'll really enjoy. And we'd like you to give us a call if we can. If you think we can help you, we'd love to discuss your situation with you. We can offer you help. We can offer you hope. And we'd love to tell you about what God really requires for salvation rather than polygamy. We do have a toll-free hotline just for you, and it's 877-425-9993. Please give us a call. I'd also like to remind our viewers about the Adams Road benefit concert that is going to be on September 17th at 7 p.m. They've offered to do this concert specifically for our ministry that night. And if you feel like this ministry is worthwhile, we'd love to have your presence and your prayers, and grab 10 people and come along and enjoy good music from a band who really loves the Lord, and their lyrics certainly express that love. Last week, we received an email from a very ticked-off viewer from our show. He called himself Ned, and I thought that although this isn't what we're going to be talking about, I felt it was important enough to address his email tonight. He said, "I just watched your ridiculous show. I don't even know where to begin to tell you how many errors you put out in 50 minutes. Here's one for starters. You claim that no one can see God. Well, maybe you should spend more time reading the Bible instead of just claiming to have read it and complaining about Mormons. Genesis 32:30 records Jacob as saying, "For I have seen God face to face." And Exodus 33:11, "And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face." Unless Moses and Jacob were blind, how could they not see God if he's talking to them face to face? I think that it's only fair to hold you to the same standard that you're holding early prophets. If one prophecy is not true, then it's all not true. Well, it looks to me like you're dead wrong about a man seeing God, so I'm confident that everything else you said is also dead wrong. Check it out, by the way. I understand that you're angry about polygamy, but your constant Mormon bashing just makes you look pathetic. Then I heard someone call in asking for information about the roots of Mormonism, and you gave a very weak response and then directed them to utlm.org. Are you joking? Excommunicated Mormons are hardly an unbiased source about the roots of Mormonism. You are a slanderer and a liar. Granny Gear is the best authoritative source you can come up with to save Mormons. You better start looking for another line of work. Well, Ned, we all are volunteers here, every one of us. Everyone that comes and helps with this show, including me, we don't get paid one single red cent. So don't worry about that part of it. And I never said that Granny Gear is the authoritative and the best authoritative source to save Mormons. You're putting that one down for something I didn't say. Never ceases to amaze me how nasty some of our viewers can get in their responses, and we do understand why. But because our show is on a different subject tonight, I'm not going to take all the time that is needed to explain the passages that Ned talked about, seeing God face to face. There are comprehensive, honest answers to those verses, and a big clue is context. Context. And that is something that Ned completely ignored. But we will cover this more fully in a future show. Next, Ned charged me with spending my time complaining about Mormons, and that isn't true. We complain about the deceit, about the false doctrines, about the violence of early Mormonism. We discuss historical accounts, and what we discuss comes right straight from Mormon historical volumes. So you're really complaining about your own history, not about us bringing that history out. We are not anti-Mormon. We are not anti-polygamous, but we are anti-Mormonism, and we are anti-polygamy doctrine. You know, I have a lot of loved ones who are in the Mormon belief system and a lot of loved ones that are still in the polygamy groups, and I love every single one of them, and so does God, and God even loves you, Ned, and He wants you and them very much to investigate everything that we're talking about on this show, everything that you will find on the Tanner's website, and whether you understand it or not, which I don't believe you do, your eternity depends upon your checking it out. And a quick notation by the way, about the Tanner's website, who Ned sneered at, no one has ever found their research to be in error. Never. And Ned didn't like my sending our caller to the Tanner's website, so I'll offer you some more choices, and we'll put them up on the screen. You can go to www.hismin.com, hismin.com, www.irr.org, mrm.org, and sacredgrovesonline.org. There's many, many more. And on each one of those websites, including the Shield and Refuge website, there are many, many links that you can launch off into your own study of the things that we talk about. Ned complained that I didn't give good information to a caller asking about the roots of Mormonism. You know, I have deliberately avoided getting into this on this show because that isn't our focus. But Ned asked for it, and so you're going to get it. The roots of Mormonism, plain and simple, is divination and masonry. If you dig into early Mormonism, you're going to be up to here in Masonry. As an example, Masonry is where the degrees of glory came from. Masons are big into degrees. And Joseph Smith did not get the 3 degrees of glory from God. He purloined it from the Masons. And by the way, Ned, I did email you several verses, 9 verses from the Bible, that tells you that no one can see the invisible God, no one ever has or ever can. And I asked you to tell me what those meant before we further discussed your email. And isn't it odd, Ned never saw fit to respond. Now into the show subject for tonight. Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants is the revelation where Joseph Smith said that God gave him permission to take plural wives. Joseph Smith labeled it the New and Everlasting Covenant. And in that covenant, it contains threats that anyone who did not abide by this covenant would be damned. Verses 4, 6, and 27 carry the thread of obedience to polygamy or damnation. Now, despite the fact that the italicized introduction to Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants indicates very clearly that it's about polygamy, present-day Mormons and their teachers are learning that it isn't about polygamy, but that it's about celestial marriage or temple marriage or eternal marriage, however they want to call it. But if you do look into your early Mormon history and the sermons and the people who talked about celestial marriage, without question, polygamy and celestial marriage were synonymous. They were identical. They were interchangeable terms. Tonight we want to investigate their claims regarding new covenants, specifically two of these new covenants that you talk about. One, the first one we're going to discuss is the Book of Mormon, really another testament or another covenant. And Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, and to discuss these two items, are they truly covenants from God? I have asked the pastor of Main Street Church of Brigham City, Jim Catlin, to be our guest. And as a pastor, he would be able to understand and explain these things very clearly to our viewers and discuss these issues tonight. So, Jim, you were our guest on July 1st as right. We did
the 100th show.
And we didn't even get done with that one. Let's hope we can get done more better tonight.
We'll do better.
Thanks for coming to help us explain. And I hope we can explain very simply the biblical covenants that we want
we
to
can.
Discuss.
Yeah.
Our main focus tonight is to answer the questions. In view of biblical revelation, is it possible for the Book of Mormon to be another testament or another covenant of Jesus? And could polygamy or celestial marriage be the new and everlasting covenant? So the Bible is actually contained, separated into two sections.
Right.
One's called the Old
right.
Testament and one's called the New Testament.
Right. Right.
But they could, the term could really actually just as accurately be Old Covenant.
Old Covenant and New Covenant.
The
right.
New Covenant. So
right.
would you explain the terms right. and the difference between the two?
Yeah, the Covenant and Testament are almost identical in their usage, it turns out. But the titles that were given to the first half of the Bible, the Old Testament, pre-Jesus, wasn't really called Old Testament until there was a New Testament, a New Covenant, as a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when you get into the New Testament, the New Covenant, he's talking about using the words of Jesus himself. So when you think about Testament, don't think about testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Think about a covenant, which is an arrangement. It's a prearrangement, usually unilateral. And so you can say, well, in some way then, if you take the titles of the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Old and New Covenant, then the Old Covenant is about some old arrangement, and the New Testament is about some new arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And singular, in that sense, an old
mm-hmm.
and a new.
So, yeah.
So that's what it's that's where it comes from. It's not an arbitrary term. It really means something about an arrangement from God.
So when we see the front cover of the Book of Mormon, which claims to be another testament of Jesus Christ, by the way,
right.
that they didn't even put that on their Book of Mormon, I think, until the early 1980s. It wasn't part
oh, really?
Of the original Book of Mormon cover,
yeah.
but they say it's another testament.
Mm-hmm.
So is it possible that since the biblical language, testament and covenant are interchangeable in the wording, would you clarify the following questions? Is it possible that the Book of Mormon could be another covenant of Jesus Christ?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, is it another one of the same kind or is it another one of a different kind? And if so, does it effectively set aside any of God's previous covenants?
Yeah, see, that's a good question, because since we know that testament means covenant and covenant means an arrangement, then the first question I would ask, if I knew nothing about the Book of Mormon and it claimed to be another testament, another covenant, I'd ask myself, so what is this other arrangement? What's the new arrangement that the Book of Mormon's introducing,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would read it and say, well, what's the new deal? Because I read the New Testament in contrast to the Old. I know what the new arrangement is in the New Testament.
Yeah.
But from what I've read in the Book of Mormon, I can't find what the new arrangement is in the Book of Mormon.
Right.
I mean, it purports to be historical about, you know, a settlement in the Americas. But in terms of a new kind of arrangement between man and God, like what we read about in the New Testament, I don't see it.
I don't find it. In fact, it's kind of a potpourri.
It's kind of a potpourri. I would expect it to make some major thrust, especially if it's another covenant, a new kind of arrangement where God says, well, now let's do it this way. Mm-hmm. I don't see that.
In Doctrine and Covenants, section 84, verse 57, it actually refers to the Book of Mormon as being a new covenant. Internal evidence, like you just said, is there any internal evidence of any covenant at all going on in the Book of Mormon?
Well, I'm not an expert on the Book of Mormon. I've read a lot of it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe some of our listeners can help on that one, but I haven't caught it yet.
I haven't seen a covenant.
I don't see it. So I would expect to have, and we'll talk about this more, just like the New Testament has a major new unveiling of a new arrangement, you know, mm-hmm. which is actually a fulfillment of the old arrangement.
Right.
I would expect some kind of fulfillment and continuing on some change. I don't see in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
So,
As I was doing some research for this show tonight, I came across a page on IRR.org, which I had earlier mentioned as a good website, and I'd like to quote just a little bit from one of their pages about this, and you can find some good information there, by the way. But anyway, this is what they said on this precise question. Perhaps most damaging of all is the way the Book of Mormon confuses the Old and the New Covenants. Mm-hmm. It stresses that before the coming of Christ, the faithful kept the law of Moses, yet they also established churches, taught and practiced Christian baptism, and were conversant with New Testament doctrines and events, which weren't even revealed yet.
Not even out,
at the time they have them.
Yeah.
And the gradual unfolding of theological themes so evident in the Bible is completely lacking in the Book of Mormon. In the Bible, the Old Covenant is taken away to establish the New, and the Book of Mormon disrupts this divine pattern and intermingles the covenants and their ordinances.
Right,
and
their final remark
is, a careful evaluation clearly shows that it is in no sense an authentic revelation from God.
Wow. Yeah, what they're mentioning, if you simplify what they're saying, and that's pretty simple, is the fact that from the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, It's pointing forward to a fulfillment in a newer covenant. It not only hints at it, it says it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the continuity into the New Testament, it comes and Jesus says, my blood is that new covenant.
Yeah.
And not only that, but Jeremiah gives us a segue. So there's a lot of continuity between the books. We don't see that continuity in the Book of Mormon.
Right. We see all the fulfillment, so many fulfillments in the new of what came through the old. So now the Bible is systematic in its presentation, like you've been talking, of the God's truths. And now we're going to turn to section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, which is said by Joseph Smith, and now temple marriage is what they use today in today's semantics, that it is a new and everlasting covenant. So keeping that in mind, let's look at what the Bible calls the new and everlasting covenant and what they call the new and everlasting covenant. So what does it reveal? What does the Old Testament reveal about You already just barely touched on it.
Let's get a little detail going on what it
says about the everlasting covenant.
It's exciting. Again, if you remember, every time we say covenant, don't turn it into a religious word. Think of some kind of unilateral arrangement from God's perspective. I'm making an offer,
an agreement that he wants.
And it's not something that we have deliberated on together between man and God. We don't have to try to cut a deal with God. God says, here's the deal.
Yeah.
And okay. So, one of the principal places you want to go in the Old Testament that links between the Old Covenant and the New is in Jeremiah 31. So let me just read this for you. Jeremiah 31, 33, he says, but this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. Now, that very last line he says right there, and they will, I'll be their God, they'll be my people. You see that over and over as a theme throughout the entire Old Covenant book called the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you'll be my people, I will be your God. It's just over and over and over and over and over, just repeated. And so what he's saying is that sounds like an arrangement. Mm-hmm. If you'll be my people, I will be your God. And that's what he's saying in Jeremiah 31. This is the covenant. The covenant is, if you'll be mine, I'll be yours.
And so they're agreeing to be identified with him.
Exactly.
To be identified with him alone.
Because you notice that it's mutually exclusive. It's like, if you'll be mine, I'll be yours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's single-minded.
Yeah. And it's I will. God says, I will.
Right.
Which reminds me of the covenant he made with Abraham in chapter 12, verses 2 and 3. He called Abraham, and he gave him several promises. I think 6 times he said, I will
make you a great nation. I will bless all the nations. Goes on. Yeah, I will. Yeah.
And you won't find anything in there that says, you will.
Right.
Everything is up to God.
He doesn't say to Abraham, by the way, if you do all these things, then maybe I'll think about blessing you and creating a nation. You know, keep your nose clean. We'll make a nation out of you. He doesn't do that.
And he doesn't say, go get baptized and go do all this other stuff in order to be in the covenant
I will.
It's all God's power.
Here's the arrangement.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so regarding the new covenant, Jeremiah predicted the new covenant. Of course, it was fulfilled on Calvary. And we're going to get to that in a minute, too. But God had revealed to Isaiah that the Messiah would become the new covenant. Actually, become the new covenant.
He would be that arrangement.
Isaiah 42, verses 6 through 7, God says, I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thine hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles. Now, this is the Messiah he's giving for the covenant. To open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. And then Isaiah 49:8, he says, I will preserve thee and give thee for a covenant of the peace people. So the Messiah becomes the covenant. Mm-hmm. He was given as the son and offered up as the sacrifice in this new and everlasting
and see,
covenant.
That's a good example of what we talked about, where the Old Covenant book, the Old Testament, points forward to something coming. This is pointing forward to the Messiah Jesus being that covenant.
And he's going to be that new and everlasting covenant.
Right.
He is.
So the whole Old Testament book is waiting for this guy.
Yeah.
That's the covenant fulfilled.
And pointing to it, right.
Yeah.
So can polygamy, or even if they don't, the modern Mormons don't even want to call it polygamy, they call it celestial marriage. But can polygamy or celestial marriage replace what Jesus did for us on Calvary, on that new and everlasting covenant, or even equal it?
Well, if you stay biblical in your thinking, no. There's no connection at all. And in fact, if the entire covenant that's being prefigured in the Old Testament, the Old Covenant book, is pointing toward this one who would solve the problem, then it's not pointing to all of us finding spouses. It's pointing to this one. So no, it can't be the one and the same. In fact, in a way, it does violence to Jesus being that covenant fulfilled.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it does bad, blasphemous violence.
Yeah.
So explain how the new covenant, that God is actually committing himself to be the one who makes and keeps the covenant, but he does this often in terms of marital words.
I think that's the irony of the entire thing, is that we're talking against 132, which is a celestial marriage thing, but in the reality of the New and Old Testament, God's covenant to us is really like a husband and wife. And I'm not making this up.
Right. I know you're not. I've read
it. But if we back a couple verses before in Jeremiah 31, I mean, this is where it comes from. So let me just read for you the two verses before the one we just read.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and this is still in the whole idea of this new covenant, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant. There it is. That's the word. We didn't make it up. A new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, although I was a husband to them. So, saith the Lord. So what God is saying is that, you know, the old covenant was broken in the same way that a husband and wife have their relationship broken because one of them is unfaithful. Mm-hmm. It breaks the relationship. And God's saying very clearly in Jeremiah 31:32, and it wasn't me. I was always a husband
faithful
to them.
He fulfilled
so
his part.
So the implication is that Israel, like a spouse, like a wife, was unfaithful to God. Even though God said, you know, I'm the one that took you out of Egypt. I protected you. I provided for you in the desert in hard times. I'm the one that was a husband to you in every respect. I protected. I provided.
Mm-hmm.
But Israel was unfaithful.
They were unfaithful.
Like an unfaithful spouse. So he's bringing this idea that we're very familiar with about a marital relationship.
Yeah.
So we can kind of have an analog to say, well, what is this offer from God? What is this arrangement? Well, there's something about it being like a marriage.
Yeah, and when they would go off and worship the other gods, and
right,
this is where
right.
the multiple gods of Mormonism is pretty darn scary because
because
he called it spiritual adultery. Again,
spiritual
that was
adultery.
There's another marital
and,
term.
And remember, God also says that he's a jealous God.
Yeah.
Well, what other context do you use that in except for a husband and a wife who runs away? He's jealous because mm-hmm. the wife has run away from someone else. So mm-hmm. really it's more marital than we've ever thought, really, in terms of what God is offering us as an arrangement and his relationship with us.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, so God has exclusive love for each of us,
mm-hmm.
and it ties in closely with the marriage and with his design of fidelity to him.
Right, right.
Typified by our fidelity to each other in a marriage relationship.
Just like, because we understand that. Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that because, and I think, I know that we're going to get some response here.
I hope so.
That God has a lot of people so a man can have a lot of wives.
Yeah, well, you don't want to go there.
That's not what that means,
right.
though. That is not what that means
right.
at all.
Right.
So explain how his exclusive love for us is ties so closely with the marriage, but excludes any.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Yeah, well, we're going to go back to Isaiah 54 and look. Because the interesting thing is that God, in Isaiah 54, when you get, in fact, if you don't know Isaiah, the last third of Isaiah, Isaiah is talking somewhat in the future. He's saying, you know, okay, Israel, you're going to fail. You're going to be unfaithful like an unfaithful spouse. And once you come to your wits, you're going to realize how shameful this was, just like an unfaithful spouse is. You're going to realize how shameful it was, and you're going to say, oh, gosh, who could ever love me because of what I've done in my relationship to my husband God? And so Isaiah writes in Isaiah 54 and says, okay, well, here, let me console you in the future sense, after you've kind of got your head straight about this, you know, sleeping around you've done, you know, Israel, with other gods. He says in Isaiah 54, verse 4, fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded. For thou shalt not be put to shame, and thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood anymore. And he's talking about Israel sleeping around metaphorically mm-hmm. with other gods.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 5, for thy maker is thine husband. And there mm-hmm. it is again.
Yeah.
Thy maker is thine husband. The Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. The God of the whole earth shall he be called. For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit, and a wife of youth when thou wast refused, saith thy God. Remember, he's not talking about individual wives. He's talking about corporately all mankind in Israel here.
Mm-hmm.
For the mountains shall depart, the hills will be removed, but my kindness, then this sounds like a husband, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord that hath mercy on me. And then if you jump forward to chapter 62 of Isaiah, he keeps the whole idea about the fact that even though you're coming from a shameful past, because you've slept around with other gods,
mm-hmm.
metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
He says in Isaiah 62, verse 4, thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land Beulah. And he translates those words for us.
Mm-hmm.
For the Lord delighteth in thee. That's what Hephzibah means. He delights in you, and the land shall be married. And this is an astonishing verse, verse 5. For as a young man marrieth a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee. And as the bridegroom rejoiceth over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over thee. So what he's saying is that when Israel repents and realizes the stupidity and selfishness of their ways and come back to God, God says, like he said in Jeremiah 31, well, I've always been here. I've always been the husband who's wanted you. And I will overlook your shame, and I'll overlook that guilt, and we'll be back together again. So again, the covenant fulfilled even after their rebellion is marital
mm-hmm.
with God.
Mm-hmm. And it just required a desire to come back and a desire to be forgiven.
To be forgiven. And to turn around and say, God, we will be yours.
Yeah.
Remember, that's the first half of it. Will you be God's? And they say, yeah, we'll be yours.
All right.
Just like an unfaithful wife would say, I'm back. I'm all yours. I'm yours.
Yeah.
And only yours.
I'll be yours.
Yeah.
Now, we know, we can know God's love and actually be amazed at the simplicity, and it's so simple.
It is.
That was one of the amazing things to me when I became a Christian. It's so simple.
It's very simple.
It's beautifully simple. And he's made it possible for all of us, for everyone, to understand it and to come under his covenant. All we have to do is say yes.
Say yes.
We just agree. It's like the wife and the husband say, I do.
Right.
To each other.
Right.
It's that simple. It's not a bunch of works.
Yeah.
Now, we talk about agreeing with him, like receiving Christ, to all those who received him, to those he gave the power to be sons of God. And so so Christians will use the term receiving Christ. Can accepting the terms of the agreement be considered as a work?
As a work itself?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. If you go to a wedding and a husband is there and he's marrying the wife, and he has already made his offer to her. He's already said, will you be mine? At that point, she doesn't have to work to earn the right to be the wife.
To become his wife.
She doesn't say, oh, no, wait a second. I got to go home and kind of, get my life straight or anything. He says, no. Will you be mine as you are? And she says, yes. So really, it's not a work because you're not earning anything.
Right.
That's the whole thing. He's saying in his offer unilaterally in this arrangement, I want to be with you. All you need to do is say,
I do. I will.
But it does cost you. In fact, I brought my pastor's wedding manual today because I just did this wedding. This has a whole bunch of different things to recommend weddings. But you've heard this before in some Protestant weddings. You'll hear the officiant get up there and say to the husband, he'll say, wilt thou love her, comfort her, honor and keep her in sickness and in health, very, husband-like, protective, and forsaking all others.
Forsaking all others.
Keep thee only unto her. So, and then you say same thing to her. Will you obey him, serve him, love, honor, keep him in sickness and health, and forsaking all others, keep yourself only for him.
Yeah.
So really, it's simple. But it costs you everything else.
Everything else. And that's what
everything
God wants
else.
From
and
us.
And that's what he wants.
To take
total
him
undivided
as our
attention.
Only God
right.
and forsaking anything else that would take his place as
right.
the first in
and,
our life.
And when you look in the history of Israel, when they failed God, it wasn't because they were messing up on a few small laws. It's because they said in what they did, God, we don't want you. We want this. We want this God over here. We want this over here.
Yeah.
And God says, like a husband, he says, well, if you want to put your affections that direction, I'm going to let you go and do that. But you have to understand, you're forsaking me. You know what I said in the marriage, and you're forsaking me. So they went and looked after other husband replacements for God, and that's where they fell.
And got in big trouble
every time. Yeah, big trouble.
Well, we'll open up the telephone lines now. We're not done yet, but we'll keep talking while you can call in and give your comments and your opinions, questions that you might have about our subject tonight. I think it'd be nice to hear from people in polygamy groups or even from those in the Mormon Church who have a different idea of what marriage is and what the covenant is that God has given us in the Old Testament, the New Testament, and which is referred differently in the Mormon vernacular. God has given us, like you've already talked, an excellent example of the everlasting love that with him that endures, even though they were out playing around with other gods, other ideas. And his love was enduring. It was prevailing.
He was patient.
He was very, very patient
and
forgiving when the time comes. It remains constant. His love is unconditional.
Right.
And you have a perfect story in the Old Testament that illustrates
this. It's incredible. Most people haven't read it. The story of Hosea. Hosea, and God comes to Hosea and says, Hosea, I'm trying to get across to my people what they're doing to me. And he says, so we're going to do it in an illustration in life. We're going to do an illustration in life. So he asks Hosea to marry a woman who has the worst reputation of sleeping around there is. I mean, the worst reputation. And let me just read it for you. Hosea 1, verse 2. The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. And the Lord said to Hosea, go take unto thee a wife of whoredoms. Whoredoms. That's a strong word.
Yeah.
And children of whoredoms. So she's got it in her blood. Other modern translations call us harlotry. But I mean, it's loose living. And he says, why? For the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord. So I want you to take a woman known for her loose living, who comes from whoredom. I mean, that's what she's known for, because the land itself is doing that to me. And when he's talking about land, he's not talking real estate. He's talking the people of the land.
The people of the land.
The
right.
people are doing it. So he's come back to this whole marital relationship that's been violated. And then if you go to chapter 2, verse 7 of Hosea, he says that Israel, like his wife, is going to fail. But she's never going to ever find what she's looking for. She's going to look for a replacement for her husband, God, but she'll never be satisfied. So chapter 2, verse 7, he goes on and says, this is God speaking, "And she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but shall not find them. And then shall she say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then was it better for me than now." And I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to jump to chapter 2, verse 18. He goes on and he says, "And in that day I will make a covenant for them," and this is God speaking as the husband to Israel, "I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field," that's protective, "the fowls of the heaven, the creeping things of the ground," he'll protect you from those, "and I'll break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth," which means, you know, I'll keep wars away from you, "and I'll make them to lie down safely," very husbandly. Verse 19, "and I will betroth thee unto me forever." That's marital. Mm-hmm. "Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness and in judgment and in loving kindness and in mercies." He's talking about the woman, Israel, that's been sleeping around.
Right.
And then verse 20, "And I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Lord." And by the way, that word "know" is the same "know" that Adam knew Eve and conceived children.
That very personal, intimate.
Intimate knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I'll just end with verse 23, "And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy. And I will say to them which were not my people," here it is, "you are my people, thou art my people, and they shall say, thou art my God." So when I say this is a theme, it shows up everywhere.
Yeah, it does.
It shows up everywhere. It's very marital. If you'll be mine, I'll be yours.
Yeah. And all he promises to do. Again, there's 10 I wills
there's 10
in
I wills.
This passage.
I know.
Where God says, I will.
Just agree.
Yeah. Just agree. And that's all we have to do with Jesus, is just agree.
Say, I don't want anything else.
Yeah.
I have chosen you and you alone. But there's a problem in remaining faithful.
We've got 3 calls coming in.
Oh,
let's take those calls and go forward after that, okay? Line 1, Galen in Salt Lake. Hello, Galen.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, I'd like to ask Pastor Caitlin a question. I have a lot of friends who are evangelicals. I'm a Latter-day Saint. And I ask him a question, which doctrine of the Latter-day Saints do you think is the biggest error? To other people that I've talked to, the evangelicals, I ask them if they agreed with me that the doctrine of continuous revelation is the biggest problem in Mormonism, and that if they're teaching false doctrine, then all their other false doctrines are directly tied to that. Would you agree with that, or would you emphasize something else? Thanks for your time.
That's a good question.
Through the Old and New Testament, God does relate to us intimately, you know, but in terms of having an office and an authority of a prophet through whom all the revelation comes through, you know, you don't see that in the New Testament.
Uh-uh.
You don't see the church established that way or go on. It doesn't happen. So if I was going to agree in any sense with that, and I agree with it pretty much, I disagree most strongly probably with the idea that there is a reestablished authority. Because that has to have certain earmarks to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't see those earmarks.
So there's no reestablished authority like they're claiming.
Right,
and because
right.
of that, that puts them in error in everything.
Right. But I wouldn't put that at the top of my list for errors, but we don't have time for that tonight.
So one of the things I noticed in my studies when I first started studying these things was if the preexistence
yes.
falls, everything in Mormonism
right.
falls.
Right. Yeah, I have grown over the years to... I'll say this gently, to really dislike the preexistence doctrine.
It's ugly.
Probably more than many other things. And we don't have time to really get into it. Maybe we'll spend some time later. But
yeah.
it tends to give you a sense of entitlement. mm-hmm. like we're already in.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, yeah. and yet the theme of the Old and New Testament is no. Jesus is very clear. You're sons of your father, the devil.
Right.
And you need to be born again, have a new birth in the sense so that you can be adopted into God's family. So mm-hmm. the whole entitlement idea from preexistence is a very dangerous thing, biblically speaking.
It is, and it's absolutely unbiblical. Okay, line three, Janet in Kearns. Hello, Janet. Janet?
Yes, I have a question, Doris.
Yes.
You were talking about the covenant, and this is like an agreement that God wants us to have with Him.
Yes.
And that's our choice. And we have communion every week, some churches only once a week. Tell me what the communion has to do with the covenant also as far as us with Jesus. And I'm going to let you go so I can answer the,
okay,
I can hear the answer.
Janet, are you talking from a Christian church viewpoint or from the Mormon church viewpoint? Did she?
I think she hung up.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. This is a Christian viewpoint.
Oh, okay, Janet, thank you.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, I'll let you take that one.
You're going to make me take that?
Yes.
Well, again, you know, I am no expert in myself. I'm an expert only in what I read in the Bible.
Right.
And so in the Bible, Jesus, during the Last Supper, sits there and says, you know, this is a Passover meal. He says, he changes what's typically done in a Passover Seder and introduces these elements of the bread and the wine. And he says, do this to remember. Do this in remembrance.
In remembrance.
So I have to presume when he says that, I'm tending to forget.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what it's all about. It's not about us reestablishing any kind of arrangement with Him, but it is a way that Jesus says, I want you to use this to remember.
Right.
And in the same way, Passover was a way to remember. Passover for them, for the Jews.
Remember
when I took you out of Egypt, mm-hmm. and it costs blood for that. I want you to remember that. So
mm-hmm.
that's why you do it.
And that's a good question, too, because I know in the LDS church, they call it sacrament, to renew their covenants.
To renew, right.
But there's no covenants involved. Jesus is the covenant,
right.
and we're just remembering, like
that
you say.
That work is done.
Yeah, it's done.
We said, yes, I do. It's done. But we do forget, so
yes.
it's very useful for us to do it, because we tend to let the busyness of the world kind of push that away and say, no, that's right, I am purchased by Him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tremendously glad I am.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Okay, Janet, I hope that answered your question. And now we'll go to line two, Michael in Ogden. Hello, Michael.
Yes, I've got a comment and I've also got a question, but I know this is going to come across really harsh towards LDS folks, but I can't understand for the life of me how they can watch your show and watch Heart of the Matter and other shows where you guys tell them right from their very own Journal of Discourses, church history, their own writings, that you know, all these contradictions, all these things, and they absolutely refuse to look into it. And to me, and this is just a comment, I know this comes across harsh, but that's just really gullible. Especially when you're toying with your soul. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I wanted to point out is that, and you, the pastor, I guess, can mention this. You know, in the LDS church, they believe there are many gods, but they say, so when you're talking about all those gods in the Old Testament, I think you need to clarify to them that they really aren't gods.
Right.
They're just
false gods.
I think you know where I'm going with that one.
Right.
And I'll get off and I'll let you respond.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Thank you.
That's a great point.
It is a good point. One thing I want to say, and this is in defense, I was born and raised in a polygamy group, and when you don't know anything from the cradle but what you're taught,
mm-hmm.
and you are, the fear of everything is put into you in studying anything else, I can understand why they don't know anything else and why they won't look at anything. I can understand that, but except that God's grace was poured out on me, I would still be blinded.
Yeah.
And that's why we do the show, is to see if we can provoke the polygamists and the Mormons to study, to get into it and find out, to break through.
Because
that,
I've heard you say too, and we don't want you to take our word for it, I would much rather us say just enough so you dive into it yourself.
Right,
Because the Word of God, the Bible, is very authoritative. It's It speaks powerfully, and so you don't have to take it from Doris and Jim. You can read it for yourself. But the problem is we can't get people to read it for themselves.
Right. They don't need to. That's I've talked to so many people. Yeah. I don't need to read it. I just know.
Yeah.
Well, they do. God said to. Why are they exempted from God's command? He said to test everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Everything. Yeah.
Including
right.
what we say. Okay,
that's
line
right.
one. We have John from Salem. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hi, John. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air.
This is John from Salem.
Yes.
I just want to tell you that your show is right on.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate hearing from you. Is there anything, do you need to turn your TV down?
It's, you're right on with the Mormon religion, and I totally agree with everything you say. And your show is badass. Thank you.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Yeah, well, that's a biblical term, you know, the King James
kind of
version.
Is. Yeah, I've never used it like that, but I guess, yeah.
Balaam had one, well,
Balaam
I guess,
had
I don't
one,
know.
Yeah. And truth came out of his, yeah, anyway, so we won't
go there.
We won't go there.
Okay, thanks, John. We didn't need that, but thanks anyway. Now, God had repeatedly said, like you've mentioned, that he said, I will be your God,
right.
I will be your God, I will be your God. But Israel was consistently unfaithful to him. In fact,
right.
we all are.
We all are.
We're all sinful. Every
right.
one of us, we're quick to follow false doctrines, false gods, which our caller said, remind them they really aren't gods, and they aren't.
Yeah, right.
And
we make them gods.
We are made the ones that make them
yeah.
number one in our life, which
right.
makes them into God. And we're
right.
so easily led down the primrose path that false prophets know this, too, and
mm-hmm.
that's why they're
mm-hmm.
easily led. Yet in the new covenant, he has taken it upon himself the burden
mm-hmm.
to bring us safely, just like God promised in Hosea
right,
that he would bring
right.
Israel through it, he's also promised that to us.
Yes.
To bring us through and safely through into eternal glory, if you
right.
will. In contrast, we right. are too quick to turn to ourselves for the answers. We make ourselves into a mess and then
mm-hmm.
we're too quick to turn to human.
Yeah, because you have to think in a husband-wife relationship, like with Hosea and his wife, it would just have been as bad for her to say, not that I want to go live with another man, but I want to live alone. And so there's a lot of what mankind does. It
yeah.
says to God, I'd just rather live alone.
Good
I'm not
point.
Going to finding someone else.
Awesome
so they're both
point.
Problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we're prone to both.
And we can't fix ourselves without him.
Right.
No matter what our
right.
problem is. No matter how bad we dug ourselves in,
yeah.
we need him to get us out of it.
So we need him to fix our unfaithfulness.
Right.
So we can enjoy this offer
exactly.
that he's got. And that's
exactly.
where we get stuck.
And all we have to do is say, I do. And you know how humbling that is.
Because you have
people
to,
who say,
you have
I'd
to
rather.
You have to admit that you're wrong and that you can't help yourself
mm-hmm.
and that you're dependent on his mercy and his grace.
Mm-hmm. And not on your own works
and
or
pride's got to go away. Yeah, yeah, that's tough.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in fact, let me read this from Hebrews 9 because it really addresses that. In fact, if you're looking for a place to read more about it and you've never read the book of Hebrews, read the book of Hebrews. It's
mm-hmm.
it holds our hand through the entire process about the old and new covenant.
It sure does.
And I'm going to pick a piece out of in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 14. He says, you know, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. And for this cause, he's the mediator of a new testament or a new covenant. There it is. It's
yeah,
again.
There it is.
He's the mediator of a new covenant that by means of death for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first covenant, the first testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. So he's saying that Jesus is the one who is the he's that new covenant. He's the one whose blood pays the price for our unfaithfulness,
mm-hmm.
basically,
mm-hmm.
and then makes us capable to be part of this offer from God. And so we're back to God saying, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will, and I will solve
yes.
the problem of
yes.
your own unfaithfulness
yes.
through the blood of Jesus. And the writer of Hebrews says, that's the new covenant right there.
That is the new and everlasting covenant.
Covenant. Right.
So the new covenant was Jesus Christ dying on the cross for our sins. And if someone later comes after the fact, And by the way, it was also sealed by his resurrection.
By his resurrection,
that
right.
That proves that, right. that his sacrifice was qualified, right.
Right.
So if someone later, like Joseph Smith, comes and introduces a statement and a covenant, calling it a new and everlasting covenant, which he did in section 132, are they in essence, in reality, setting aside the atoning sacrifice of Jesus on the cross and placing this other new and everlasting covenant in his place?
Well, the word new presumes it's taking the place of the old.
It does, doesn't it?
I mean, that's and everlasting means it's always been. But you know, in reading the Bible and then taking my understanding of the Bible and these covenant ideas and then hearing Joseph Smith say in D&C 132, well, this is a new and everlasting covenant, I would be expecting something as big and earth-shaking as Jesus saying, in my blood is this new covenant.
Yeah.
That's what I'd be expecting. Mm-hmm. I would be blown away to read that it's about celestial marriage or polygamy.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit. And it's not even partially prefigured in the Old Testament as this is coming. It's completely out of sequence.
Right. Very good point. Yeah. Okay, we got some more calls here. Line one, we have Suzanne in Salt Lake. Hello, Suzanne.
Yes.
You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I had a few comments that I'd like you to talk about or just comment on. In terms of polygamy, I tend to think of the scripture in the New Testament that says a man shall leave his family, a woman shall leave her mother and father, and the two shall become one flesh. And that's always been important to me, because that's monogamy right there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'll probably get this a little mixed up, but in the New Testament, when the Pharisees were trying to trip up Jesus and saying, I think it was a widow, if she marries over and over again and the husbands die, who will she be married to in heaven?
Right.
And then Jesus responds by saying, there will not be marriage in heaven.
Right.
And so, I'd just like to hear what you think about that.
Okay. Thank you, Suzanne. Okay?
You have thoughts on that, so I'll let you start.
Well, and we've brought this up several times on the show about Adam and Eve. If God's plan for marriage was polygamy, he would have modeled that in the first marriage. And yes,
sure.
The two shall become one. And that's the way God wants our relationship with him, that he's our only God. And he will be our God if that's the case. And on the one with the man being married seven times, the Pharisees trying to trip Jesus up on that. Over and over again, we mentioned this. And again, the polygamy people and the Mormon people, they refuse to look at the text of the Bible. They say we misinterpret it, but it's no interpretation. You just read it.
That's
it's
what
there.
It says. Yeah.
And Jesus said there's no marriage in heaven.
Right.
Well, the early Mormon polygamist said that what that means is you have to get married first
before you die here
so that you will be married in heaven, because it's too late then.
Because you get married there. You can't get married there.
Right. But that isn't what it's saying at all.
That's not what it says. And in fact, I would have expected Jesus, if he'd read D&C 132, to have answered really differently. They said, whose wife will she be there? And he would say, as Joseph Smith would say, the one that she got sealed to in the temple.
And on top of that,
but he doesn't say that.
And Romans 6 says that when someone dies, the marriage covenant is dead. Absolutely dead.
Right.
Of course, they didn't have Mormon temples in the days of when Paul wrote that to Romans, so maybe that's why he wrote that. He didn't know about the Mormon temples.
Well, and then one more thing Jesus adds in that discussion about the fact that he says our nature will be different. We'll be different kind of beings, like angels. So he's trying to say right there, you know, we're different. We're different in some way, so marriage is kind of an obsolete thing because we'll be different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a clear thing he's saying right there. We always kind of scoot right past that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's absolutely true. And we will be different. Okay, very quickly, Jean and Layton. Hello, Jean.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Doris.
Hi.
a little while ago, you said that by the grace of God, that you were able to come out of Mormonism and polygamy. And my question is, a gentleman had called earlier and had said he couldn't understand how, with everything that you teach, that people wouldn't, you know, understand and start looking into it. Now, is it not the grace of God that would bring them out, or is it their own ability? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do, and it's both, actually. You've got to be willing to look. You know, sometimes people can look at it right straight in the face and they say, I don't believe it. So you have to have a willingness there. But yes, it is the grace of God. It gives you the power to find these things out. I mean, we all have the opportunity to believe what we read or even to open a book and read it. Would you like to say something?
Yeah, that's the same thing. I'm thinking of what Paul is saying in Romans. He says, you know, how will they believe if they don't hear?
Right.
So there is a hearing process that has to happen. And then your heart and your mind is confronted with the truth. And then at that point, you know, it's a grace and faith issue. Do you accept it? Do you embrace it? Or do you say, yes, God, you and you alone and everything else, no? Or do you say, well, I still got to try some other stuff for a while, so I'll get back to you on that. You know,
yeah.
It really is. It's the grace of God that the message even gets to you.
It is the grace, and it's the grace of God who saves you and opens your eyes to understand it. Did that help you, Jean?
Yes, it does, because I've just wondered that about my own family members. And, you know, I struggled with that and wondering, you know, that I just thought I just need to keep planting seeds and loving them.
That's right, and pray for them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here already. so let's do some final comments before the two-minute bell rings here of your conclusion of what we're talking about. I just want to make it very clear to the viewers who may be questioning that the new and everlasting covenant that Joseph Smith used, the statement in Section 132, really could not be such a thing.
It's a misfit in all of scriptures. Doesn't make sense. And it also, like I said, does great violence to the value of Jesus being that covenant.
Since Jesus is.
Right. And in fact, the closing comments in Hebrews, he talks about the blood of the eternal covenant, the everlasting, being from Jesus, you know, the shepherd. So it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit.
Well, thank you, Jim, for coming and helping to clear this up. It's a big subject, very deep subject, but it's beautiful. I'd like to apply a couple of our verses to from Isaiah 54, specifically to polygamous women tonight who may be hurting. And I know most of you don't admit or won't admit that you've experienced pain by sharing your husband with other women. You'll battle it and deny it and stuff it, but you sometimes won't admit it. But God made you for one man, and He also made your man for only one woman. And it's against God's design for either partner to have multiple spouses. I'd like to read again a verse in Isaiah 54, verse 10, where God says, "For the mountains shall depart and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, says the Lord who has mercy on you." Everything and everyone around you can fall apart, but God's promises won't remove His covenant of peace, but He can't remove it unless you're first under it. And it isn't celestial marriage, and it's not polygamy. Like marriage, when we receive God, He's exclusive to each of us, and He promises fullness to us all the time. And that's how He wants your husband to be to you. He isn't a part-time God, and He doesn't want your husband to be part-time either. And likewise, polygamy has nothing to do with salvation. It's all about Jesus, how He loves us, how He seeks us to find us and restore us, how He heals the brokenhearted. Polygamy can't heal the brokenhearted. Polygamy only creates broken hearts. But God, our covenant, our new covenant in Jesus Christ, is the one who does all these things for us. And we just ask you to ask God to simplify these truths to your heart and embrace exclusively the one who loves you unconditionally and the one who promised He would never leave you and He would never forsake you. Tune in again next week as we talk about polygamy in the Mormon temples, and thank you for watching tonight.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.